headlines. Iran once again rejects Ukraine's allegations about supporting Russia with weapons, saying undocumented accusations cannot resolve the crisis. Palestinian officials say Israel is fully responsible for the current escalation in the West Bank, warning it may lead to an explosion in the situation. And thousands of people take to the streets in Spain's capital, Madrid, demanding higher wages. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran has once again rejected the allegations that it provided Russia with weapons to be used in Ukraine, reiterating Tehran's preparedness to help end the conflict. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani stated that emotional comments and baseless accusations would not resolve the Ukraine crisis. Kanani urged Ukrainian officials to respond to Iran's call for holding technical meetings with Kiev's military experts on the issue of drones. This is in reaction to Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kubela, who accused Iran of supplying arms to Russia. Tehran has already said that it is ready for talks with Ukraine to clear things up. Iran has also called for an end to the war in Ukraine, urging restraints on both sides. The spokesman for the Palestinian president has held the Israeli regime fully responsible for the escalation in the occupied West Bank. Nabil Rubdina has warned that Israel's ongoing deadly crackdown against Palestinians could lead to an explosion of the situation on the ground. The remarks follow the killing of four more Palestinians by the regime forces in Al-Quds, Ramallah, and Jenin in just less than 24 hours. Israel has recently stepped up its deadly onslaught across the occupied territories. More than 140 people have lost their lives in the West Bank this year alone. Palestinians have repeatedly called on the international community to help end the Israeli blitz in the occupied territories. Israel's former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has returned to power following elections that saw his party and allies win the parliamentary majority. The Electoral Commission says Netanyahu's bloc of four far-right parties won a total of 64 seats out of the 120-seat Knesset, winning the majority. Outgoing Prime Minister Yair Lapid has conceded defeat and accepted the election results. For years, Netanyahu has been involved in a massive corruption scandal. He has been indicted on multiple bribery and fraud charges. He denies all of them. Voting stations opened on Tuesday for the fifth parliamentary election in less than 4 years. The elections were called after a coalition of anti-Netanyahu parties, led by Lapid's ally, Naftali Bennett, collapsed in June. The coalition disbanded over the defection as the regime struggled to address security and inflation. Our correspondent in the West Bank says Israeli troops use lethal force against Palestinians with no rationale.
Since the beginning of the year, the Israeli aggression continued. Raids storming Palestinian areas had been taking place on a daily basis, whether to arrest Palestinians accused by the Israeli forces for being wanted for security reasons, fighters, and recently the formation of the so-called the Lion's Den. Those Palestinian fighters had been, resisting the Israeli forces using armed resistance, of course, but recently recently we had been witnessing an increase of arrests among the Palestinians, an increase of using lethal force, using the Israeli soldiers had been using their arms in order to shoot and kill, not only to shoot and arrest Palestinians, under the different and various, of course, unjustified reasons.
Former Prime Minister Imran Khan has been wounded in an attack on his protest march in Pakistan's eastern Punjab province. Khan's party has held the government responsible for the attack. Nasser Kazmi reports.
An attack on the convoy of ousted Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan wounded him and several of his supporters who were marching towards Islamabad, demanding early elections. Police said that a gunman opened fire at the campaign truck carrying Imran Khan, wounding him slightly. Since his ouster in a parliamentary no-confidence vote in April, Khan has been alleging that his dismissal was a conspiracy engineered by his successor Shahbaz Sharif and the United States. The PTI leadership has directly blamed Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif, Interior Minister Rana Sanaullah, and a high-ranking military official for carrying out the assassination attempt.
We demand that these three men should be removed from their posts. If these people are not removed from their positions, then there will be nationwide protests.
While asking Imran Khan's supporters to stop the blame game, the government has assured every possible support for holding high-profile inquiry into the assassination attempt.
The incident is very unfortunate and condemnable, but it should not be politicized, and speculations on this incident must be avoided.
Political experts believe that the attack on the PTI party chief will trigger further political instability and chaos in the country.
I think in the days to come, the Pakistani political atmosphere will be more charged. It will be more violent. This gun attack on Khan will definitely change Pakistan's political scenario.
The attack on the former Pakistani premier also sparked countrywide protest and international contaminations.
The attack on the former Pakistani Prime Minister has further fueled the ongoing political tensions. It is highly believed that more confrontations would be witnessed in days to come in the country's political arena. Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad.
2 decades of U.S. war in Afghanistan has killed many Afghan people. Although the U.S. withdrew its forces from Afghanistan in 2021, the devastating aftermath of the war is still pervasive in the Afghan society. Security is still not restored, and many are in constant danger. That includes Afghan journalists who risk their lives on a daily basis to bring the latest to the people.
A new report by the Afghan Journalistic Center shows that at least 127 journalists and media workers lost their lives during the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. Investigations also show that in more than 90% of those cases, the ones responsible for the deaths were not brought to justice. The Association of Afghan Reporters is demanding the International Criminal Court to take a look into the killings. People are also asking the Taliban to stay true to what it has promised and show support towards Afghan journalists. That includes ending impunity for crimes against this group of workers who are constantly under danger in a war-torn country.
The U.S. started the war on Afghanistan and caused devastation and casualties. It should be held accountable for the death of all civilians, especially journalists, in the past 20 years. The International Criminal Court should investigate the killing cases of Afghan journalists and recognize them as international crimes. The families of slain journalists should be paid compensation. Unfortunately, so far, not a single case has been inspected.
This comes as those 127 martyred journalists have been two honest and dedicated staff Said Farhad Takaddusi and Habibullah Hussainzadeh, who lost their lives on duty in 2011 and 2017. The relatives and colleagues of the two continue to honor their memory.
Two of our colleagues at Press TV were among the victims of U.S. war on Afghanistan. Syed Farhad in 2011 and Habibullah was martyred in 2017, both on duty and in war incidents. They were so close to me and meant a lot for Press TV and the medium community in Afghanistan. Their loss should not be forgotten or ignored. We demand justice and compensation for their families.
The commemoration of martyrs comes as the Afghanistan situation is still tense for journalists. Rights bodies are calling for support and protection by the ruling Taliban and the international community. Due to war and insecurity, Afghanistan has been one of the most dangerous countries for reporters. And there have been journalists like Press TV's martyrs who gave their lives in the line of duty. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Thousands of people have gathered in Spain's capital, Madrid, to demand higher salaries amid the country's deepening cost of living crisis. The demonstration was called by major labor unions. The unions want the government and businesses to agree to raise minimum wages in the face of rampant inflation. Like many European countries, Spain has seen price hikes due to the war in Ukraine.
When consumer prices jump 10% and salaries rise by 1%, it means workers are losing purchasing power fast. We are getting poorer every day, and the worst part is that there is a minority getting richer at our expense.
Inflation in Spain peaked during the summer at under 11%, while it has slowed in October to reach over 7%. The figure is still higher than normal levels. Meanwhile, Eurozone consumer prices climbed at a record pace of over 10% last month. Food, fuel, rent, and home heating prices have been spiraling upwards in Europe as the continent braces for the worst to come in winter. Now, Moody has changed the Italian banking outlook from stable to negative. This as growth prospects in the country have been downgraded by national and international statistical agencies and institutions. Max Civilli reports.
Rating agency Moody's has recently changed its ratings outlook on Italy's banking system from stable to negative. Business conditions for Italy's banks are expected to further worsen in the coming 12 to 18 months, especially with regard to the quality of their loans and earnings. The news broke at the heels of a series of downgrades in medium-term growth forecasts by the Bank of Italy, the National Bureau of Statistics, ISTAT, Employers Association Confindustria and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
We will hold a highly important cabinet meeting on Friday, during which we will discuss new budgetary targets as the government is racing against time to draft the 2023 budget law.
Italy's statistical agency ISTAT has predicted that the Italian economy will be flat in 2023 after growth of around 3 to 3.5% this year. Moody's forecast was even more cautious, predicting 2.7% growth for this year as a whole and zero growth next year.
The challenges for Italy go well beyond economic growth. Prices have reached record highs lately, with the country's annual inflation rate hitting almost 12% in October and energy costs still out of control. In addition to that, the euro's weakness with respect to the American dollar has significantly eroded the purchasing power of the Italians.
Latte, pane, milk, bread, pasta. All these basic items cost much more now. I'm very worried.
When you go grocery shopping, but also when you buy fuel or are faced with paying exorbitant energy bills, everything seems to be out of control. That said, I am pretty sure that they are not telling us the truth about what's really going on.
On Thursday, Italy's new far-right Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni travelled to Brussels to meet with the leaders of European Union institutions for the first time. In the Belgian capital, Meloni held two meetings with the President of the European Parliament, Roberta Metsola, and EU Commissioner for Economy, Paolo Gentiloni, in which her main ask was reportedly greater joint EU efforts to cope with energy costs. Max Civili, Rome.
The International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, says that it has found no signs that Ukraine is working on a so-called dirty bomb. The IAEA made the announcement after its independent investigation at three Ukrainian sites. The UN nuclear agency launched a probe at the behest of Kiev. That also after Russia recently accused Ukraine of planning to use a radioactive device laced with toxic nuclear material against Russian troops. Moscow also warned that such acts could raise the risk of conflict in the region. Kiev and its Western backers, however, have denied these allegations, saying Russia was setting a pretext for using nukes in the Ukraine conflict. Meanwhile, North Korea warns that the South and Washington have made a very risky and wrong decision by extending the joint aerial drills. The secretary of the Central Committee of North Korea's ruling party says the two countries are pushing the circumstances out of control. He said Seoul and Washington will ultimately come to know what a terrible mistake they have made. The warning comes as Seoul and Washington are conducting their largest ever joint air drills involving hundreds of warplanes from both sides. Pyongyang views the drills as an aggressive and existential threat, and the U.S. and South Korea say they have agreed to extend the exercises beyond Friday, when the drills have been set to end. South Korea said earlier on Thursday that Pyongyang had launched multiple ballistic missiles.
This morning, our military detected the firing of one long-range ballistic missile from Sunan area in Pyongyang toward the East Sea, and two short-range ballistic missiles from Kaohsiung in South Pyongyang province toward the East Sea.
The South Korean official said Seoul will respond to any provocation from Pyongyang and will track North Korea's movements in close cooperation with the U.S., according to South Korean military. The intercontinental ballistic missile the North launched on Thursday likely failed in its flight hours after Seoul said that Pyongyang had fired a, quote, unspecified ballistic missiles just a bit earlier. North Korea has fired at least 23 missiles, the highest number in one single day. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Brazilian people, along with anti-imperialist activists and politicians, are now happy at the victory of Lula da Silva as the elected president of Brazil because of his pragmatic policies and a strong opposition to U.S. hegemony. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Iran's publication, Kayhan International, wrote, Brazil is again on the straight path with the defeat in the presidential elections of the U.S. protege, incumbent Jair Bolsonaro, who destroyed the country's health, economy, culture, ecology, and the political landscape. Call him leftist in the jargon of the capitalist West or any other term you like. Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva is the right man to lead Brazil and deliver it from the mess his predecessor has plunged the country into. A person who served two terms as president, Lula, as he is popularly called, has now become the chief executive for the third time, a record in the history of Latin America's largest country and the world's fifth largest with a population of over 217 million. A level-headed politician, during his previous terms, he is credited with lifting some 30 million Brazilians out of poverty. Now, with his comeback, he is faced with fresh challenges because of the chaos into which the U.S.-backed Bolsonaro has pushed Brazil, where today some 15% go to bed hungry and the economy is on a steep slide. Like all other politicians around the world, Bolsonaro was a racist, a sexist, and a homophobic, whose divisive policies has led to his defeat in the presidential elections, despite the heavy rigging in his favor by the state apparatus to try to keep him in power. He is responsible for Brazil's huge coronavirus pandemic death toll of nearly 700,000 people, in addition to his wanton destruction of the Amazon rainforest, which has caused irreparable damage to not only Latin America's ecology but also of the world. The Brazilian people are now jubilant at the victory of the tried and trusted Lula, who is not only popular in his homeland or Latin America, but throughout the world, the free world as well, because of his pragmatic policies and a strong opposition to U.S. hegemony. Lula, who is to be formally sworn in as Brazil's new president, is welcome again to Tehran at the earliest opportunity to discuss matters of mutual interest, ranging from strengthening of bilateral ties to cooperation in Latin America, international relations, and of course, the chronic question of Palestine. It is worth recalling that Lula had officially recognized Palestine as a sovereign independent state languishing under the occupation of the Zionists, to the horror of the illegal entity called Israel and its godfather, the U.S. Today, the political landscape in Latin America has positively changed, as is evident in the fall of pro-U.S. regimes in several countries, including in Colombia, for the first time in that country's history. Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua, the bastions of independence against U.S. encroachment, as well as Mexico, Argentina, Chile, Bolivia, Ecuador, Peru, and others, welcome Brazil to their ranks and view the victory of Lula, who has fought and defeated throat cancer and the false charges that had put him in prison as a triumph for the whole of Latin America. Global Times also had a look on the recent Brazil's election, writing, "The results released by the Superior Electoral Court of Brazil show that in the second round election on October 30, the Brazilian Workers' Party candidate and former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva defeated incumbent president Jair Bolsonaro from the Liberal Party by a slight advantage and was elected as the new president of Brazil. Chinese President Xi Jinping sent a congratulatory message to Lula over his election as president of the Federative Republic of Brazil and expressed his willingness to work with Lula to jointly push the China-Brazil comprehensive strategic partnership to a new level from a strategic height and long-term perspective so as to benefit the two countries and two peoples. As a big country that accounts for about half of South America in terms of area, population and GDP, and has important influence in international affairs, Brazil's general election has attracted great attention from the international community. In addition, due to Lula's special background as president during 2003 to 2010 and his reputation in global politics, especially in South-South diplomacy, people from all circles have high expectation over the direction of Brazil's internal politics and diplomacy under Lula. Since Lula vigorously promoted the development of China-Brazil relations during his previous term of office and visited China several times, many people are paying high attention to the development of China-Brazil relations after he comes to power. However, Lula's identity as an old friend of the Chinese people has been subject to some ulterior interpretations in the current public opinion environment in the U.S. and the West. Some claim that in the context of tense China-U.S. relations, Latin American left-wing forces assuming power will be interpreted as a rejection of U.S. hegemony. Others say that it will be inevitable that Lula gets closer to China after his election. Some even argue in a conceited manner that a full tilt towards China is unlikely. There are, in fact, a copy of the recent hypes of ludicrous narratives such as that China is infiltrating in Latin America and turning the region into its backyard. Such interpretations are actually judging others by oneself. Global Times added, since the establishment of diplomatic relations, especially since Lula took office the first time in 2003, China-Brazil relations, particularly the economic and trade relations, have developed quickly Today, the economic and trade relations between the two countries have witnessed remarkable growth, becoming ballast stone of the bilateral ties. The deepening of China-Brazil relations follows the trend and has a strong internal driving force. It will not be easily changed shortly or by a single event. Though there were some noises in bilateral times under Bolsonaro, China-Brazil trade still hit the record of about $164 billion in 2021 despite the pandemic. In the past few years, Washington has come to its wits' end to squeeze out the disharmonious factors in China-Brazil relations and amplify them, but as everyone sees it, there is no desired effect. Lula wrote in the government plan, "We advocate working toward the construction of a new global order committed to multilateralism, respect for the sovereignty of nations, peace, social inclusion, and environmental sustainability, which takes into account the needs of developing countries. The plan can find many common grounds with Global Development Initiative and Global Security Initiative that China proposed." Brazil has created three firsts in its ties with China. The first developing country to establish a strategic partnership with China. The first Latin American country to establish comprehensive strategic partnership with China. And the first Latin American country whose bilateral trade volume with China broke the $100 billion mark. Long-term friendship between China and Brazil, deepening mutually beneficial cooperation, is in the fundamental interest of the two countries and two peoples and is conducive to maintaining regional and global peace and stability, promoting common development and prosperity.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies. Welcome to another episode of Muslim Lady. In here, we're talking about the topics that are most interested to Muslim ladies. Well, I am Asma, your humble host, and here with me, I have Sister Zainab to help us with some information about the book that we recently have started to talk about. In this book, we are gathering some information about the personal and also social aspects of life of Sayyida Zahra, salamullah alayha. Since we, as Muslim, follow Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam because they are the practical example of the perfect Muslim according to the Holy Book of Quran, So we go for a Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha, in order to get more of how to be as a real Muslim lady.
Yeah.
We talked about clothing and how to pick the certain sort of dress that is not going to be, making you pick out from the crowd. So, and we talked about the purity of our dress. We talked about the cleanliness and a lot more, actually. We went through too much of information considering that. In today's episode, we're going to talk about personal care and personal health, which is very much important for all the ladies all around the world.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Thank you so much, Sister Asma. So we would go for personal care today. That was another etiquette after clothing and table manners. So now comes personal care. And in personal care, the first very thing is, again, cleanliness, to be tidy, mm-hmm. whether in terms of your food that we discussed in terms of table manners. Whatever you eat, it should be clean, pure as well. Mm-hmm. And we discussed the difference between the two in the previous sessions. And then it should be cleanliness is the first think in terms of your food mm-hmm. and as well as your clothing.
Yeah.
Also your body.
Now, sister, before you just start, since we're talking to Muslim ladies and ladies in general, you see, many times it happens that we actually consider all the human beings all around the world to be so much clean, to go for too much of health care, body care, or whatever. But I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I guess we always expect a woman to do that more than a man.
Because she's the main engine of the house,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, we expect a woman to be like this thing that, which is the symbol of cleanliness.
I'll tell you the point today that would maybe come as a shock, but this will show you how important it was to discuss this personal care separately. Otherwise, we could have covered it in the previous sessions when mm-hmm. while we were discussing cleanliness.
Yeah, exactly.
But there are certain things in personal care that would come as a shock right now for you. Some sins, rather, are related to not giving much attention to personal care.
Yeah.
In personal care, they would take care of to keep everything clean, to keep their body pure. So cleanliness is not only related to your food or to your clothing, it's also related to your body. You would keep your body clean and pure. Number two, they would remove extra hairs from the body, which is very, very important. I'm mentioning this because this is very important. This is very, very important. And what this is going to lead to, I'll tell you this. Even all the men over there who are listening to us right now, it's very important that you go for these things.
Yeah.
Because our Prophet, may peace be upon him, he will go for trimming nails. He will go for combing his hair.
Mm-hmm.
He would go for oiling his hair. And you as a mother, when you're teaching your son to oil your hair, to, you know, basically comb your hair.
Take care of your body.
Take care of your body, trim your nails, to take care of the tidiness and all.
To have a routine for your body.
When you're teaching your son with this intention, you're basically making all those mubah things, the neutral things, which had no reward so far or which had no sin so far, you're making them mustahab. You're making them recommended because you're following the seerah now.
Mm-hmm.
You're following the prophetic way of life. So you as a mother, when you're teaching your son to have personal care, not to make someone attract you, but with the intention to, you know, basically our prophet used to be like that, you're making a neutral thing, a recommended thing. Now, there's a big difference, Sister Asma. What is that? There's so many ladies out there who go so much for personal care.
Yeah.
But the intention is not following seerah. The intention is not following lifestyle.
This is very important.
The intention is to attract.
Yeah.
With this intention, you're basically making a neutral thing that you could have. This is not neutral anymore because you have the intention to attract.
And intention does matter in our religion.
Intention is something that really matters a lot. Islam is not against personal care.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, Islam is something that is so much emphasizing on the personal care.
Yeah, to the point that it says that it is the sign of your religion.
Exactly. When I see trimming nails, just see the women out there who are keeping these long, long nails like the, I don't know, I won't mention like what. But just look out the nurses on the internet who are requesting women not to go for these, you know, permanent kind of
which is going to destroy the nail itself.
Attaching nails.
Yeah.
Because there have been ladies who died because of just fixing nails on their, I don't know, maybe this is
because it may cause some infection.
Yeah, maybe this is just not infection. They wanted to, I don't know, they wanted to put on some drip into her hands or I don't know, something, and her nails were an obstruction.
Yeah.
They had to take care of some other medical cares and your nails become an obstruction. So,
We should say that with those nails, we're not going to have purity.
You again have nails as obstruction in your prayers.
Yeah.
Because in our prayers, as per our jurisprudence, the water should go over your nails, not something on your, like you put on some glue and then even if you're putting it on, then remove it.
Yeah.
Do not attach it permanently. It's not somewhere like in the religion that you attach some artificial nails and then you attach them permanently. I don't know how you offer prayers then.
Exactly.
You have to take care, you have to educate yourself about jurisprudence as well.
And we already talked about it, that having those nails, since we were talking about purity, is going to impede in the way of your purity.
Yeah.
Then when you're going to wash your hands or whatever, all the dirts are not going to be removed. So it's actually, again, personal care. Thank you, dear ladies. We are going through some points about the lifestyle of a Muslim lady. Stay with us. We'll be back after the interval.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back to Muslim Lady. Waylon here. We're talking about personal care, something which is very much routine, very much normal and natural, but maybe some people do not go for the delicate points that is related to it.
Yeah. So that's why we were talking about attaching these nails.
Yeah.
Now, is that completely like we have to completely avoid it because some people are really, really addicted to this?
Yeah.
No, you could go for temporary ones, for some temporary beauty. But you have to remove them while you're offering prayers. So educate yourself on the jurisprudence perspective. On that note, I would refer that. But trimming nails is much better because that has been the lifestyle.
Yeah.
So another thing was dental hygiene that would take care of.
Which is very important.
That's so much important. Like there are some companions of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his family, who say that Prophet Muhammad would say so much about brushing your teeth before Salat. We felt like it, as if it's an obligatory part.
Exactly, yes.
It's like, and you know, for the information of our dear listeners, reciting a prayer while you brush your teeth and then now you're going for wuzu and offering prayers, mm-hmm. it has 70 times more rewards than a normal prayer that you go without the, you know, brushing your teeth.
Extra.
So dental hygiene is very, very important because that's something, that's the first thing you start communicating with others. That's the first sign of you show how much this person cares about his personal health.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you are not able to, you know, basically take care of your personal health, how would you be able to take care of others' health? Because you as a mother, you as a sister, you as a daughter have to take care of all other people around the family. So you yourself have to take care a lot about dental hygiene.
Yeah.
Because I said in the previous episodes as well, whatever you do, sometimes your children pick up.
Most of the time,
It's not just all the time. You have to just start lecturing them, do and don't, do and don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is very hard, which becomes very hard for you to, like, when you start lecturing them and they don't listen to you, they become disobedient. It's very, very easy to make them obedient while practicing yourself.
Exactly.
We have so much in Surah As-Saff, verse number 2 and 3, which says, oh, those who have faith, do not say to others what you do not practice yourselves.
Exactly.
So only say those things what you practice yourself.
So sometimes through practice, you can preach other people.
Exactly.
Stay with us. We'll be back after the interval.
Personal care, cutting hair was also in one of
just to keep it tidy.
Yeah, just to cut hair, to trim hair, to oil hair, to comb hair, and ordered appearance. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean? They would not go out with the clothes, which were like, if I say today, the clothes which are not ironed.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes.
So the appearance would be very ordered. When I say ordered appearance, it's again against those advertisements which come and show men that you should put your, I don't know, 2-3 buttons open and then your ties should be on your, I don't know, somewhere in the middle of your stomach.
Yeah.
That's very unordered. Exactly. That's not an ordered appearance. So whatever your looks, they were ordered. They were in sequence. Mm-hmm. They were not like you were wearing, I don't know, something you were not supposed to wear on your tops. You're wearing that on your tops. What is happening today, you know, all upside down and there's exactly. No sequence and order.
Everything has so gone tipsy-turvy.
So the appearance was ordered and they would use perfumes. They were perfume users. And to the shock of many people, Lady Zahra Salman Alaiha would love to dye her hair. She would love to color
very
her hair.
Beautiful.
Just do this. Do the same practice with the intention of I'm following the lifestyle of Lady Zahra Salman Alaiha.
And actually keeping it under your scarf.
Exactly. Do it for your husbands.
Yeah.
We will come to that point. I mean, after this, we'll come to that point. But these were some of the features they would take care of. And they would also wear the akik ring on their right hands.
Yeah.
Which is, again, one of the signs of Muslims.
And for those who do not know what is akik, it's a kind of a stone which has got different colors, I suppose, mostly in brown. And then it has been very much recommended for us as Muslims to wear those kind of rings with that sort of specific stones.
And there are so many stories out there on the internet
yeah.
that will tell you the health impacts of these stones on
yes.
your...
Yes.
Yeah.
So we were talking about personal care, and this was the things that Sister Zainab has brought us for today's session. We actually understood so much, and actually the thing that I got from her recommendations, the thing that was very much important is the intention. As ladies, we have too much of things to adorn ourselves with. But the thing which is very much important is to have a good intention, is to have the intention that you're doing that for yourself and you're keeping it in your home. You do not take that outside with you into the streets to show off in every single corner where there are crowds. So the intention is very important. Personal care is very much important. We talked about some very delicate issues. And thank you, sister. And thank you, dear ladies.
Much.
Until another session, I just bid you farewell.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. But this waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
With the reduction of gas delivery operations through Russia's Nord Stream pipeline to European countries, the fear of a gas shortage in the green continent has intensified. Most European countries and even other countries that are dependent on gas imports are confident that they will face a severe energy crisis this winter. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu news agency tells us more. According to the International Energy Agency's gas market report for fourth quarter of 2022, published on Monday, 3rd of October, global natural gas markets are set to remain tight next year, with lower gas flow from Russia to Europe, high gas prices, lower demand, and the impact of energy-saving measures. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, said, as Russia's curtailment of natural gas flow to Europe leads to new highs of international prices, it also disrupts trade flow, leading to fuel shortages in some emerging and developing countries. According to the report, Russia's reduced flows to Europe deepens market tensions and uncertainty ahead of the coming winter, not just for Europe, but also for all markets that rely on the same supply pool of liquefied natural gas, or LNG. According to the report, the record high prices seen in European and Asian spot LNG markets reduce gas demand and incentivize the switch to other fuels such as coal and oil for power generation. Europe's gas consumption dropped by more than a record 10% during the January to August of this year, compared with the same period in 2021. Driven by a 15% fall in the industrial sector as factories curtailed production. Europe increased liquefied natural gas, LNG imports, as well as alternative pipeline supplies from Norway and elsewhere to offset the sharp falls in Russian gas supplies. Europe's demand for liquefied natural gas, LNG, grew by 65% in the January to August of 2022. Compared to a year earlier. This demand has drawn supply away from the traditional buyers in the Asia-Pacific region, where demand contracted by 7% over the same period due to higher prices, mild weather, and continued COVID-19 lockdowns in China. With the impact of market tightness and high prices, a 0.8% decline in global gas consumption is expected this year, with a record 10% contraction in Europe and unchanged demand in the Asia-Pacific region. Global gas consumption is expected to grow by only 0.4% in 2023. However, the International Energy Agency, the IEA, said in the report, the outlook is subject to a high level of uncertainty, particularly in terms of Russia's future actions and the economic impacts of sustained high energy prices. Britain's Financial Times newspaper explains more about the same story. Recently, the head of the International Energy Agency, Fatih Birol, said the scramble for energy resources between the European Union countries this winter could destroy European unity and trigger social unrest. As quoted by the newspaper, Fatih Birol said, "The implications will be very bad for energy, very bad for the economy, but extremely bad politically." According to the newspaper, Birol said the growing energy crisis in Europe raises concerns that some countries may conclude third-party deals for imports of gas from Russia or restrict the export of electricity to their neighbours. In this case, European countries will cease cooperation with each other and everyone will be on their own. Fatih Birol added, "If Europe fails this test in energy, it can go beyond energy implications." In addition, the International Energy Agency head cautioned against the European Union complacency after the European Union managed to accumulate natural gas reserves ahead of this coming winter. According to Biro, even if Europe avoids negative surprises in gas supplies, such as colder than expected winter, it will face other consequences in the coming months, including an economic downturn and significant damage to household budgets. The start of Russia's special operation in Ukraine in February of this year exacerbated the energy crisis unfolding in Europe over the past year. Disruptions in logistical and financial operations due to the conflict and Western sanctions against Russia have undermined supply chains and led to a spike in energy prices worldwide. Moreover, the Reuters news agency has more on this story. The International Energy Agency's forecast that Europe's LNG imports will increase by over 60 billion cubic meters this year, or more than double the amount of global LNG export capacity additions, keep international LNG trade under strong pressure for the short to medium term. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, said in its latest gas market report published on Monday, 3rd of October, it said, "This implies that Asia's LNG imports will remain lower than last year for the rest of 2022. However, China's liquefied natural gas LNG imports could rise next year under a series of new contracts concluded since the beginning of 2021, while a colder-than-average winter would also result in additional demand from Northeast Asia, further adding to market tightness." The International Energy Agency's resilience analysis of the EU's gas market finds that the EU's gas storage will be less than 20% full in February of 2023, assuming a high level of LNG supply in the case of a complete Russian supply shutdown starting from 1st of November 2022. And without demand reductions in place, or if Russian pipeline supply is completely cut, storage levels drop to 5% of full capacity, assuming low LNG supply, as storage falling to these levels would increase the risk of supply disruptions in the event of a late cold spell this winter. According to the analysis, a reduction of 9% from the average level of the past 5 years in EU gas demand through the winter months would be necessary to maintain gas storage levels above 25% in the case of lower LNG inflows. A reduction in demand of 13% from the five-year average will be necessary through the winter period to sustain storage levels above 33% in the case of low LNG inflows. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, warned, "Therefore, gas-saving measures will be crucial to minimize storage withdrawals and keep inventories at adequate levels until the end of the heating season." The announcement of the emergency is likely to heighten fears of blackouts because the United Kingdom relies on gas-fired power plants for the largest share of its electricity supply.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.